a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin.
You're listening to R1 News. My name is Isla Taring. I'm one of your hosts for the next hour. Coming up, we have the Bulletin, a STEM segment on the HASNO Act, and then the weather. Before we get into the bulletins, next up we have Puawai by Sophie Burberry.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, 27th August. I'm Jemima.
And I'm Isla. In national news, the fast-track approvals bill is being changed. The bill pertains to approvals relating to the infrastructures, housing, and development projects with the purpose to speed up processes on these projects. However, the bill has been critiqued for not containing environmental protections and centralizing power on the ministers. Resource Management Act Reform Minister Chris Bishop and Regional Developmental Minister Shane Jones announced a series of changes on Sunday afternoon at Parliament. The decisions on the fast-track approvals bill will now sit with an expert panel, with the Minister for Infrastructure referring projects to them. The group of experts are composed of expertise in environmental matters and Māori representatives pertaining to treaty-related settlements and Mātauranga Māori. They will consult with the Minister for the Environment and other relevant ministers as part of the referral process. The group of experts would be selected by the government. In response to the bill, Green Party Environment spokesperson Lan Pham described the change as a shallow repackaging that failed to address the main concerns over the environment. Labour's environment spokeswoman Rachel Brookings said that it was a small win for the campaign, but emphasized the lack of environmental safeguards and concerns.
On the 16th of August, students of Te Herenga Waka, Victoria University, Wellington, held a sit-in after finding the university invests $47,500 in Israeli government bonds. The rally began on Hunter Lawn just after noon on the Friday, then moved into the Hunter Building atrium, where the Vice-Chancellor's office and council chamber is located for the sit-in. Students carried Palestine's flag and held signs and covered the atrium windows with post-it notes, with messages such as "Vic Uni, divest now," "Stop funding genocide," and "Toitū te tiriti." In addition to the sit-in, an open letter by Students for Justice in Palestine, Poneki, demands Vic divest from Israel, implement a boycott divest sanctions policy, and establish scholarships and fellowships for Palestinian students and academics, like the 2022 scholarships established for Ukrainian academics. Speaking to Salient, Students for Justice in Palestine organizer Aya Kayid says, "It's crucial that we as a student body make it known to these institutions that we will not accept our money being directly tied to apartheid and the genocide of the Palestinian people." The open letter currently has 1,390 signatures. In documents viewed by Salient magazine, released under the Official Information Act, it was confirmed Victoria has $47,352 of its $109 million investment portfolio invested in Israeli government bonds via fund managers ANZ and Nico Asset Management. Speaking to Salient, a foundation spokesperson confirmed that they are currently seeking alternative funding managers due to ANZ leaving the fund management market at the end of August. President of Vic's Student Association and student representative on the board, Marcel Parkinson, says she's advocating for a more ethical and transparent fund manager.
A Hamilton-based dairy company was fined for false claims on 100% pure New Zealand products, despite the core ingredients being imported from India. New Zealand has the New Zealand Fernmark License Program. This program helps and promotes and protects New Zealand products and services on a global scale by giving owners the right to carry the Fernmark. The Fernmark is a trademark that is used by the New Zealand government when distributing products internationally and nationally. If an export business meets the eligibility criteria of the program, then they can display the Fernmark on their products. By giving false and incomplete information, the company was able to get the license. The Hamilton District Court has admitted 15 breaches of the Fair Trading Act. Judge Ingram induced a $420,000 fine under false country of origin representations and unauthorized use of the Fernmark logo and license number.
Thousands of pro-Palestine Democratic voters marched in protest against the Biden's administration's support of Israel throughout the four-day Democratic National Convention last week in Chicago. RNZ reports that on Monday, protesters under the umbrella group March on the DNC undertook a 2-kilometre march from a park to the site of the DNC. Then on Thursday, Democracy Now! Reports groups rallied into Thursday night as Kamala Harris formally accepted the Democratic presidential nomination, calling on the party to commit to ending the war in Gaza. Demonstrators had planned to march to the convention site but were blocked and dispersed by police and riot gear. Within the convention itself, delegates from the uncommitted movement lobbied within the party, pressing for a U.S. arms embargo on Israel after just 2 weeks ago when the U.S. cleared a $20 billion arms package to Israel. During her acceptance speech, Harris spoke on the issue of Israel-Palestine, opening that herself and Biden are working around the clock to secure a hostage and ceasefire deal. Harris says, quote, "I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself, and I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself." Then later, "What has happened in Gaza over the last 10 months is devastating. President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination."
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, the 27th of August. Today's bulletin was written by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer and read to you by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
That's right, you're listening to the R1 News at 1. I'm one of your hosts, Jemima. We'll be back very, very soon with your STEM news for the week on the history of the Has No Act. But next up for you, we've got Powder Shoots with Merchants. Keep it locked to Radio 1. Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. Today's show is hosted by myself, I'm Jemima, and Isla Taring. And now we've got some STEM news for you.
STEM News with Isla Taring on the R1 News at 1.
Hi, I'm Isla Taring, and this is STEM News. The main segment is going to be on the Has No Act and its developments. So it pertains to genetic engineering, but the first successful case of genetic engineering was in 1973, where an organism had the first recombinant plasmid containing genes from two different organisms. Since then, there have been a range of techniques classified as genetic engineering, resulting in the need for a narrow definition for genetically modified organisms, more commonly known as GMOs. In addition, there have been narrow guidelines on what can be considered as acceptable forms of genetic engineering, depending on the country, with further complications in risk-benefit legal frameworks within each country as well. It can be characterized simply as the EU being a process-based approach, while the US has a produce-based approach when it comes to risk assessment. In the 1990s, more specifically 1996, the Has No Act was established, also known as the Hazardous Substance and New Organisms Act, in New Zealand. Its main purpose was, quote, "protect the environment and the health and safety of people and communities by preventing or managing the adverse effects of hazardous substances and new organisms," end quote. The main purpose of the legislation had an emphasis on the introduction of new organisms like plants and animals, which could disrupt the ecosystem of New Zealand. However, during the time, there were many concerns about GMOs. In the late 90s, the world saw the first widespread coverage and commercialization of genetically modified crops. Therefore, there was pressure on the government to include genetically modified organisms in the New Organisms Act. Within this act, GMOs were defined as organisms that have been modified through in vitro techniques. Since the application of the legislation, many new technologies have come out pertaining to the field. The Act implies that older technologies, those that were released before its establishment, are subject to less scrutiny. However, this choice is incongruous when considering the procedures taking place. CRISPR-Cas9 works the same way as site-directed mutagenesis, however, CRISPR was developed later, so there is a greater amount of scrutiny towards it and the lack of use in New Zealand. Both techniques are also in vitro, but still produce two very different procedural outcomes. In addition, some genetic techniques occur naturally in the environment, but technology just allows there to be an accelerated process. In New Zealand, Laboratories have been utilizing gene technology since the 1970s. However, there are restrictive rules, like the Hasno Act in the 1990s, that have made lab research near impossible. In 2018, New Zealand researcher Dr. Greg Bryan, principal scientist in ag research, had to exploit overseas infrastructure to conduct field trials for a new generation ryegrass. This ryegrass had the potential to lower livestock emissions by 23% and increase drought resistance. In 2014, LanzaTech, an Auckland research company, had left New Zealand due to its over-restricted laws. This is a huge loss to New Zealand, considering that the company's main focus is in carbon recycling technology. Within New Zealand, they have one of the highest per capita rates of carbon dioxide emissions from road transport compared to the 23 OECD countries with data for road transport emissions in 2018. In 2023, the coalition government released a policy document called Harnessing Biotechnology. This states, quote, "It is time for New Zealand to responsibly and safely open up access to the benefits of gene technology," end quote. Even our neighbor, Australia, has embraced gene technologies, notably in cotton. In Australia, genetically engineered cotton has reduced synthetic chemical spraying by about 80%. Further benefits are the protection of farmers and their families from accidental poisoning from the elimination of synthetic chemical runoff into river systems. In Australia, the National Gene Technology Scheme exists to support a regulatory system for gene technology within the country. Changes to the New Zealand GMO regulation model would probably reflect this system. Currently, gene technologies are regulated under the Hasno Act, but with new changes, there will probably be an establishment of a group primarily responsible for genetic engineering. Published in July this year, there was a report on national conversations on genetic technologies for environmental purposes within New Zealand. The report's purpose was to have a better understanding on what specific genetic technologies in specific contexts were deemed as suitable to the public of New Zealand, with a particular branch of the study pertaining to Maori perspectives. While there will obviously be nuances in the results, the common consensus seems to be a hesitant acceptance, with people wanting greater transparency, ethical considerations, risk-benefit considerations for gene technology. Factors that shape perceptions around genetic engineering pointed out in the report include environmental factors, social factors, ethical factors, and political factors. Identifying Maori perspectives on gene editing in Aotearoa, New Zealand, another study published in Communications Biology, one that Philip Wilcox had worked on, titled, found that, quote, "participants emphasized that such approval should align with Maori values and prioritize community benefit over commercial interests," end quote, which reflects a lot of the commentary in the report before. Further benefits to genetically modified agriculture include farmers being able to use less insecticide, drought tolerant allows for higher yields and less irrigation, and less fertilizer being required.
STEM News with Isla Taring on the R1 News at 1.
And that was your STEM News. Thank you so much, Isla, for that rundown on genetic engineering and its history and the changes that may be coming to Aotearoa. Next up for you, we've got the weather.
The R1 News at 1 weather forecast.
Today, the temperature is currently 14 degrees and right now it is sunny and it is so nice. The clouds have been kind of on and off, but it is looking like the sun is here to stay. The most sunny conditions can be expected at around 4 p.m. So make sure you get out and enjoy the sun.
The R1 News at 1 weather forecast.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the R1 News today on Tuesday, the 27th of August. If you missed some of the show and want to catch up, again, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for R1 News and make sure you tune in tomorrow at 1 p.m. to continue finding out about what is going on. Tomorrow's show will be hosted by Adam Stightley, Celia Ward, and Tristan Serrano. Anything you want to add, Isla?
No, just thank you for listening and tune in tomorrow.
Perfect. We'll be back tomorrow and we're leaving you with Katua Rehe by Anna Connington.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1 here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts. Or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
This was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.